Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om agyanati mirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha nama shreshtham manamapi shachiputramatra swarupam rupam tasya grajamurupurim maturim goshtavatim radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivashakan Vitamstra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sometimes I speak on problems within ISKCON, and I'm going to speak about one of them today, which is maybe the biggest problem that ISKCON faces, and no one's talking about it, and no one even recognizes it. Now you're all wondering what it's going to be. This is actually part of a series of talks that I'm doing. I started in Pushkar on the initiation day about why, or discussing the phenomenon of devotees taking vows and not adhering to them, falling down. So it goes on all the time. Devotees join, they get initiated, they take vows, and they don't follow. Not everyone takes vows and doesn't follow them, but a large number do. As far as I can see within India, most devotees who take initiation stick with it. Although quite a lot don't also. I remember when I came to Baroda first in, it must have been the early 1980s. I used to hear the names of so many devotees, and then, but I didn't see the faces. Yeah. They went away. In the Western countries, it's most who take initiation don't stick to the vows. Of course, there's also the phenomenon which we hear about sometimes here in India, also of devotees getting initiated. And they're not following before, and they don't follow after. It's only they give the vows, but that shouldn't be. The temple presidents or Namhata leaders think that I have to show what I'm doing. I'm doing something, so I have to push people up for initiation who are not actually chanting 16 rounds or following the principles. That's just nonsense. But it is an ongoing phenomenon in our movement that people join and they take the vows, and in most cases we can presume that they are sincere in taking the vows, because otherwise why would they take them? And they've allowed to be in the initiation or ceremony or to take initiation because they have been following. And it's not so easy in the modern age to follow all these things. They have been following, but they go away again. So this is a big problem, isn't it? I mean, we have so many problems, and political problems, and financial problems, and social problems. But this is really a spiritual problem. So I'm going to... Well, ultimately, all problems are spiritual problems, especially in a spiritual movement. I'll talk about this now in giving some historical context from the early days of ISKCON in the West. It's actually amazing. We don't think about it so much nowadays, but it was amazing to people in India when they first saw people from the West living as devotees of Krishna. It was amazing. And it was amazing that Srila Prabhupada, you could say it's amazing that he even made these four regulated principles. He said that you have to follow that, because in the West, up to the present day, it's really not part of the culture. Vegetarianism, for some. No gambling, well, I guess most people don't gamble. Maybe a lottery ticket here or there, or whatever. A raffle, church raffles, if people go to church. No intoxication. That's a hard one. No, a hard one means pretty much everyone takes at least alcohol. Tea, coffee, everyone takes. Here in India also, everyone takes tea and or coffee. And the really tough one for devotees in the West, it seems, is the no illicit sex prohibition. And devotees who go away, or fall down, as we say. Go away means they... I'm speaking here in meaning they stop following to the level that they vowed to do so. Meat eating, not many go back to meat eating, if they were meat eaters before. Gambling, that's hardly there anyway. Intoxication, they may fall down into, but more than anything, it's illicit sex. Because in the Western countries, there's no idea of illicit sex anymore. Maybe among Christians here and there. There's still a strong Christian population in America. In Europe, decreasingly so. In Poland, there is. But I think that's got more to do with nationalism than actual religion, is it? Or the two are completely intertwined. Many people go to church on Sundays in Poland still? Young people also? They really lost it in Ireland. Ireland used to be super Catholic, but they threw it all out. Some old people still go to church. They're importing priests from Kerala into Ireland because they can't get any Irish people to be priests. They used to export priests and nuns all over the world, and now they have to import for the few old people who still go to church on Sundays. There may be a few communities here and there, but otherwise, Catholics and then strict Jews. The South Indian Brahmins in Silicon Valley, they mostly get married and stay married to the same spouse. But otherwise, there's no concept of that. And of what is illicit sex, the idea that you should get married and stay married. There was heir to the throne in England, in Britain, in about pre-war, pre-Second World War. He married a divorcee, and then he was debarred from becoming the king. He chose someone else's ex-wife over the kingship, over the crown. But the present heir to the throne of Britain is married to a divorcee. Times have changed. So it's actually pretty astonishing that Prabhupada even gave those four rules, in one sense, because the likelihood of people following that, it didn't seem to be very much. And Srila Prabhupada said several times that, I thought, as soon as I say no meeting, no illicit sex, no gambling, intoxication, I say, Swamiji, please go back to India. He didn't think that anyone would take to it. And in fact, at the first initiation ceremony, he didn't even tell the devotees until afterwards what they're supposed to follow. And it hit them, a shock. Who was there in the first initiation ceremony? I don't think anyone followed throughout their life. There are only a few, about five or six. Anyway, I don't want to get into the fall downs of whoever was there. There are other swamis who came from India to America at that time. I think it was Life magazine, which is a very popular magazine in America at the time. They made one issue, the Year of the Guru, because there were so many gurus coming. But none of them made any rules. But Prabhupada gave these rules. Why? He could have just asked people to chant Hare Krishna, but then they couldn't have become pure devotees. By chanting Hare Krishna, they could have got some benefit, no doubt. A lot of benefit. But they couldn't become pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada had faith that it was possible. By the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Dina Hino Jato Chilo Harinaame Udharilo. They chant Hare Krishna, it can be uplifted. So he gave all these rules, and he gave the prospect of pure devotional service, and he brought the bliss of the spiritual world. Golokera Prema Dhan Harinama Sankirtan. He brought the chanting. He was clearly, Srila Prabhupada himself was in complete bliss chanting Hare Krishna, and just existing, his existence was Satvang Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. He was full of Krishna consciousness, so his existence was completely blissful. And he imparted that bliss to others. And he gave the idea, stay high forever, in the hippie era, where getting high was part of being a bona fide hippie. You had to take drugs which made you high, which means you have the drugs give a euphoric sensation. So you feel you're on a higher platform of consciousness. But then you come down again. But Srila Prabhupada's early disciples, they came up with the preaching line, stay high forever. You go up with Krishna consciousness, and you go up, and you go up, and you go up, and you don't come down. That's the idea. But of course, Srila Prabhupada knew that to stay up, you have to follow these principles. Following or not following, breaking the principles means it's indicative that you're not up. If the consciousness is high, then we don't engage in low principles. So that was the mood in Srila Prabhupada's very quickly growing movement. When he When he went to San Francisco in 1967, in New York, he'd made a start, got some serious followers, few people. In San Francisco, the Hare Krishna Explosion, which was the name of a book by Hayagriva, who's joined in New York. He wasn't part of the West Coast scene. That's where it really took place, with literally thousands of hippies participating in the Hare Krishna movement. Most of them not very seriously, but when they had Rath Yatra, then literally thousands of hippies would come and join in the chanting, take prasadam. They loved it. And many people came and many got initiated. And Srila Prabhupada, he was at that time in, if we try to understand or try to, I don't want to use the word judge or see the situation, that was his most liberal time. Because people come, there was one time devotees were being considered for initiation, and someone at the end of class said that, can I, questions, someone raised his hand, what's the question, can I be initiated? Srila Prabhupada said, who is God? Krishna. Who are you? I'm a servant of Krishna. Yeah, you can be initiated. Devotees are being initiated with long flowing hair and not wearing devotee clothes. There was no temple program. They had a temple of sorts. It was a storefront. It was more like a, in hippie language, crash pad. People would go there and go to sleep. But the life was outside on the streets, chanting. Oh, they cooked there also, and people would come and take prasadam. And even the police recognized that the devotees were doing a good job, because once it's described, once in the middle of the night, some hippie boy, the police brought him in. They knocked on the door and said, he's crazy on drugs and screaming, and said, you take him. You look after him. They thought the devotees could help him, because everyone could see that the devotees were doing a wonderful selfless service. Srila Prabhupada saw the situation there and he said, just cook prasadam, distribute. These people need prasadam and the holy name. Give them plenty. So everyone recognized that the devotees were selflessly giving themselves to everyone else, which was what the hippie movement was supposed to be about. Everyone, love and peace, and we're all here together. So Srila Prabhupada is very liberal in giving initiation in those days, and but gradually he tightened up. One scholar commenting on Srila Prabhupada's activities in the West referred to his gradualism. He gradually introduced all the things that we've followed, the morning program. There was no Mangalati, there was no class, there was no Japa period. Actually in 1970, he introduced the morning program. And devotees used to go out late at night, I mean past midnight on Harinam, because that was the time when many people would be out on the streets. It's Rakshasa culture, they'd be out on the streets, so devotees would go out and chant till 12 o'clock and then come back. And Prabhupada said, come back early, get up early. So Srila Prabhupada introduced that in 1970. The whole idea that devotees had, even though they didn't know much compared to nowadays, where devotees were new, they were all new by today's standards. And there weren't many books, or hardly any books. Probably most of the devotees who were initiated never read any of Prabhupada's books, and maybe never even seen them, because there weren't many of them in the very early days. They were just, he had the three volumes of Bhagavatam from India, and that was it. And there was a limited number. I don't know if they had them on the West Coast at all. devotees on the East Coast were reading, but on the West Coast, what they heard from Prabhupada, that was it. That was all they knew. But there was the idea we have to be pure devotees. That's it. We're here to completely surrender to Krishna. They did a lot of chanting. Several devotees have asked me recently about if I'd seen one recording from a TV program in New York City in the early 1970s, which I have seen. And you can see that the devotees there. They're being interviewed by a open-minded but somewhat skeptical interviewer. Anyone remember his name?
David
something. David Sussman something. Whatever. So, from our present-day perspective, the devotees were very blissful, very straightforward in their preaching, but very innocent also. And nowadays we'd say naive, because it was just like, we're here, we're on the way to be, we'll chant Hare Krishna, everything's going to be wonderful. Well, that is the promise of Krishna consciousness, but practically speaking, our movement has been through many difficulties. But that was the standard to be a devotee for living in the temple, that you have to chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regulative principles. That was the standard. And the idea is to be a pure devotee, and that was it. But it's actually amazing that devotees promise to follow these things all through their life when they came from such a background. And many of them, they just had a few weeks of association with devotees. But they felt, yeah, this is what I want. I've got to do it. Their youthful enthusiasm, that Srila Prabhupada knew, that has to be sustained by following the regulative principles, because Maya tests. In Srila Prabhupada's presence, in his personal presence, devotees felt very uplifted. But they had to remain in his presence by following his instructions. So what was happening actually, that devotees, they committed themselves, and we're all in it together, and karmis are all pigs and dogs. They eat all rubbish, and they have sex here, there, and everywhere, like pigs and dogs. But although devotees were very, we used to use the term gung-ho. How do you say that in real English? Any suggestions? Upbeat, daring, yeah. But for many of them, if not most of them, if not all of them, overcoming the bad sanskaras or impressions in their heart and the bad habits, it wasn't that easy. So on one hand, jai, Hari Bol. On the other hand, inside, many were struggling. However, the mood in the temples was that you have to follow all these things. If you don't follow, you're just a pig and a dog. You have to follow very seriously. And there was no real room for even suggesting that you're having any problems. Uh, If you want to live in the temple, you come and live, and then after a short time you get initiated. If you don't get initiated, then what's wrong with you? You should get initiated. But then when you're initiated, you take the vow, and it's there's no going back. You took the vow, and then I don't know if devotees even had any idea what they're going to do when they get older. I think the idea for most of the men, the idea is they're going to stay brahmacharis all their life, which didn't happen in almost all cases. There wasn't really much thought of the future. That's another characteristic of the hippie era. The young people who had dropped out of university, which are living on the streets, and there was no real thought of the future. Well, I'm going to get old, and it was live, be here now. That was the motto, be here now. Which isn't very intelligent. One should think about the future materially and spiritually. But they're just saying, well, we're young and we're going on with life. So devotees, they were very naive, we can say. It's easy to say in retrospect. They're very naive. Srila Prabhupada, he was also pushing forward the movement. There was seeing the opportunity. There's a great opportunity for spreading Krishna consciousness widely among the young people in the West. That opportunity isn't there anymore. The hippie era is over. It was very conducive for bringing people to commit themselves in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada also didn't have so much time. He knew, he would say, I'm an old man, I may die any time. So Srila Prabhupada was really pushing the devotees forward, go out and preach. And then later he started to stress more and more about varnashram and farm communities to make a steady base in which married devotees could live and practice Krishna consciousness. But in the beginning it was just push on, forward ahead. And devotees weren't thinking much about the future. And the idea is, we're here, we're surrendering to Krishna, and we're surrendering to Prabhupada. It was more like surrender to Prabhupada. And we're all committed to pure devotional service. And it was very difficult for anyone to admit that they were struggling, because it wouldn't be well accepted. That if you're struggling with the principles, that means you're thinking of leaving. How can you leave? There was no alternative. Although Srila Prabhupada from the beginning used to say that you can chant Hare Krishna at home with your family, live with a family, but practically that didn't really begin until, well, the farms were there. Few married devotees were living in the temples, but as they started to have kids, then the usual syndrome that the devotees who are married are being supported by the temples, and as long as they don't have children, they can do full-time service. When they get children, then the amount of time they can give for temple service dramatically decreases, and their financial requirements dramatically increase. And therefore, out the door. But that really didn't happen so much. The move to Grihastha life, it really came in force after Srila Prabhupada's departure from the world. But Srila Prabhupada saw, he wanted farm communities where devotees could live with their families and be Krishna conscious. So that started. But in the early days, there was no in-between. You're either a pure devotee or you're a pig and a dog. That's all. There was nothing. There was nothing in between. You're a karmi. The word karmi sums it all up. Karmi, demon, all these kind of things. All these words were used. There's very... very heavy condemnation of materialistic society, which came from Srila Prabhupada, which came from Shastra, Shvavidvara Hoshtra Karai Sangstuta Purusha Pashuhu. What's the next line? Nayad? Nayad Karna Pato Peta Jatu Nama Gadagraja. I always remember the first line, the dogs, hogs, camels and asses. The punchline comes first in this verse. People are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses. They glorify other dogs, hogs, camels and asses, and they don't chant the names of Krishna. So there was a very strong dichotomy between a devotee. A devotee is someone who surrendered, he follows all the principles, he chants 16 rounds, gets up early in the morning, wants to introduce the morning program, goes out on Sankirtan, and then there's everyone else. There's nothing in between. Preaching means you're trying to make devotees. Devotee means shave up, move in. That's all. There's nothing in between. So this kind of preaching also brought in people who themselves were not very ready or very convinced, because they would pressure people, come and join. And for hippies, anyway, they could give it a try. Why not? And it's nice food, and I'm living on the street anyway. Give it a try. Seems like fun. But many may have not been that actually committed. As I was saying, there weren't any what we would call nowadays senior devotees. The most senior devotees, say if you joined in 1968, then the most senior devotee would have been 2 years in the movement, apart from Prabhupada, of course. When I joined in 1975, someone who was 4 years in the movement, that was considered quite senior, because most of the devotees who had joined, the Krishna Conscious came to London in 1969, and they started making devotees in about 1970, so I joined in. Yeah, 4 years in the movement was considered quite senior, because the first wave of devotees who joined, they'd all left England and gone to India and America and here and there. So 4 years, that was. And mostly very young people. Most of the devotees who joined were not more than 25 maximum. So they both spiritually not experienced and materially also immature. Now, I don't want to put everyone down or all this. The great thing is they had Prabhupada's mercy, which can override millions of shortcomings. But the shortcomings were there also. So this was the situation. So young, idealistic, nowadays we would say fanatical, in their outlook. So if you wanted to, the idea that, well, devotees, they need looking after and maybe they're having problems and you should talk to them and this and that wasn't there. There was just service, that's all. Chanting and service. There's no time to think about, well, maybe people, they need a little looking after and a little talking to and this and that. Just everyone's fully surrendered, so everyone just does full-time service, 18 hours a day, minimum. And that's all it is. So even if someone wanted to say, look, I'm having some problems, they say, what? Go and scrub the pots. That's all. You're in Maya, Prabhu. That's all. That's all you'd get. If someone was in Maya, all they would get in terms of reciprocation is, you're in Maya. Well, I know, but... And then there'd be heavy preaching to them. Yeah, okay. And okay, right, I'm going to go farm. And then again... Because after all, having a taste for the holy name and being fully surrendered to Krishna is a very high platform. And Srila, even to follow these principles is a very high platform compared to the pig and dog life of the Western world. Especially, it's not that there are no pig-like people in this country either. So what was going on? It was a kind of institutionalized hypocrisy, which, not that we're lacking in institutional hypocrisy at the present time, but there was a different kind. It was an institutionalized that everyone had to pretend to be on, fully fired up, fully surrendered, no doubts, all the time. But actually it wasn't like that. And so what would often happen is, oh, where's so-and-so? Didn't see him this morning. You didn't see him because he's gone without telling anyone. You can't tell someone I'm going to leave because then when it gets too... Just can't take it anymore. I mean, after all, there is my girlfriend back home. Or I go to my parents' place and take a little extra sleep. Because in those days, sleeping was strictly not allowed during the day. I myself had the experience once of being woken up 3 times while being present in the Guru Puja, standing up. And just standing up and just as I was about to fall over. Daytime sleeping was not allowed. And nighttime sleeping was, you also might not get much of it because there's always more service to do. And you have to get up early. So devotees, they couldn't tell anyone they're struggling. And expect to get any sympathy or guidance, and so they'd just be gone. Then afterwards everyone would say, yeah, he was in Maya, he was useless. They put him down like that. I remember, when was that, 1975 or 1976, something like that. Even one brahmachari decided to get married. That was considered also a disaster. And there was one senior brahmachari had just come in from India on his way back to America. So he was the temple president, who was a grihastha. So he said he made us all sit with this senior brahmachari who gave us a good talk on why we should all stay brahmacharis, not get married. And he also married later on. He's a sannyasi now. That was the situation. It was very, very strong pressure to follow the principles, which is good, but not real much practical help in doing so. Acknowledgement that devotees could be having a hard time and maybe you have to make some adjustment. Definitely the first thing you want to say is, okay, pull yourself together, Prabhu, let's go forward in Krishna consciousness. But then at some point, you may just have to accept the reality that someone's not going to be able to stay on the fully surrendered, fully blissful level throughout their life, and then make some adjustment whereby devotees can continue to practice Krishna consciousness at the best level that is practical for them, considering their shortcomings. But no, at the time it was just, you're in or you're blooped, in or out, that's all. And someone, if they left, although the devotees who were saying, yeah, he's in Maya, he's a nonsense, they may also be contemplating themselves that, well, maybe it's not such a bad idea. what happened is the number gradually increased. This kind of preaching room, we're always bringing people in. People come in and they go out. So gradually the number increased until the number became... And in the beginning they were called fringies. They're on the fringe. They're just useless. You can't preach to them. They already know everything. You tell them, surrender to Krishna. Yeah, yeah, I know. I just came for the prasadam, that's all. And so it would have been easier in one sense if the devotees who are still on the straight and narrow path could just say, yeah, they're completely in Maya. They're just completely nonsense. If they actually were completely in Maya. But they like to come for the Sunday feasts and the Rathi Yatras and the Janmashtamis and maybe do some service, join in the Harinams. Then they go home and whatever they did at home, that was up to them. They may be chanting also at home. But they're just, the temple life, they found it too intense. Now, I'm not saying to all the brahmacharis, now you should all leave, it's too intense. It's great. If you can live in the pressure cooker, then you get cooked quickly. Cooked means become suitable for offering to Krishna. But it is a pressure cooker. And some people may require a little lower flame. And of course, it's not necessarily that by not living in the pressure cooker of the brahmachari ashram that one cannot make rapid progress. But it is a situation in which, that's actually a fact. The living in the temple, there's pressure. You may feel it or not feel it. If you're not feeling it, that's good. But you have to get up in the morning. You have to do whatever you're told. So if you're not feeling it, you're well situated, because you're just used to it, and that's fine. You're well situated. But if you're feeling it's tough, then you're maybe not well situated. Although it's a great illusion to think that when you get outside, then you have more independence, and you can relax, because there's always pressure. Then there's, in the temple, there's the pressure to fully surrender, and in family life, there's the pressure for most people to make money. And there's social pressure from relatives and this and that, and so many things. In many ways, it's more difficult, actually. Once you have children, especially when they're very young, you have to fully surrender to them. You can't tell the kid who's screaming in the middle of the night, your feeding time is 6 o'clock in the morning. Their feeding time is right now, at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you have to feed them. So you have to be fully surrendered like that. Anyway, what was happening is that so many devotees, they went away, but not fully. And so gradually the devotees who were living in the temples, the core members of ISKCON, they had to recognize, or they, instead of condemning these people as being completely useless, had to recognize that they're also devotees, and going to have a festival like Rathi Yatra. They want to do service. They can do service. We should give them, anyone who wants to do service, we should give them the opportunity. So gradually the attitude changed. And nowadays we don't speak about fringes. We talk about congregational devotees, which is a more healthy attitude. And of course, as I was saying, Srila Prabhupada, he, from the very beginning, he said, you can practice Krishna consciousness at home. Also. But whether you practice at home or not at home, the point is that the principles are there. And especially in the West, many of the congregational devotees, they may not be following those principles so strictly. And it is somewhat of a license. Srila Prabhupada said Grihastha Ashram is a license for sense gratification. It's not a, it doesn't give you a very broad license, but when you're not living within the temple community, you can take it as much as you like. You shouldn't, but you can. So that is the that's a bit of the history. Now I intend to speak some more about this in upcoming sessions, because what's going on is that the congregational devotees are there, many of them. Congregational devotee means they're devotee, but many of them are not following the principle strictly. And I'll talk about, and I'm not talking about all of you here. I know that all of you here are very serious about Krishna consciousness, which is why you have moved to be next to the temple so that you can come and take association and do service and join in the kirtans and all this and that. But in the big, broad, wide ISKCON world, we hear of all kinds of figures. There are so many millions of devotees all over the world. It seems to be fantastically exaggerated. I doubt if there's even 1 million, but we keep on hearing these figures of so many millions. But undoubtedly there must be in the hundreds of thousands and of devotees, but it would seem, although a census has not been done, that the majority of them are not, the majority of devotees who have been initiated into ISKCON starting in 1966, the majority of them today are not following their vows fully. Four regulated principles, including tea and coffee, and 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. They've dropped that commitment. And they're going on, many of them, as devotees, but they're not following their vows, which is something that I want to discuss in further sessions. Not now. So I'll finish there for now. On that somber note. Hare Krishna. Don't think it's all over. It's like it's not meant to be discouraging, but like I said, it's maybe the biggest problem facing ISKCON today and always. It's not this, or there are so many problems. Someone sends me a link to a YouTube. Please see this and comment on it. What do you think? Some problem, this, and I'm supposed to watch it and give an opinion. And you know, how many problems can you get involved in? There are so many, which in one sense is not surprising, considering it's a big worldwide movement with high ideals in a pig dog society. But this is maybe the biggest problem of all. The spiritual problem, that many devotees take the vow and then they don't follow. That's a problem. It's an individual. When one doesn't follow, that's his own problem. When many don't follow, then it's the whole society's problem. Just like if one person has paralysis, you could say, well, that's his problem. Maybe his family's problem. But then if we find in a village that 50% of the people have paralysis, then it's the whole village. It becomes a problem that affects everyone. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.